Rob Guerin is with us on Sports Byline. He's Emeritus Professor of English and Humanities at the University of Puget Sound. That's up in the Seattle area. And his baseball articles appeared in Nine and also Saber Bioproject. And he's written a very interesting book called Home Team, The Turbulent History of the San Francisco Giants. Rob, there are 30 teams in Major League Baseball, so why did you pick the Giants for this book?
Well, honestly, when I gave up, I'm a recovering Irish lit professor, and my last book was on the Irish novel, and I decided, you know, I'm well along in the game in academic life. I'm going to write something I've always wanted to write. And I started reading books about West Coast baseball, how Major League Baseball came to the West Coast, because I was a kid at the time. I was a Seals fan when I was in high school, and then the Giants came and changed that. Well, I started doing reading, and I found out that the story was dominated by the Dodgers. In fact, one book is called The Dodgers Moved West, and there's a slight reference to the Giants somewhere about page 184. So I began looking into this and realized the Giants' story had never really been told. Walter O'Malley had overshadowed Horace Stoneham and L.A., you know, the story about them getting settled. And so I began doing my research. I started interviewing. My first interview was Monty Irvin, who talked about the New York years. And then I just began working. It took 6 years to get the book ready to go. I did a lot of interviewing, a lot of research, but I wanted the Giants story sort of brought out and told, because they are a very important part of a great chapter in making the national game truly national geographically.
So you grew up in the San Francisco area then?
I did. I went to Sarah High School in San Mateo. I was born and raised in San Francisco. My parents moved down the peninsula when I was about 12. And when the Giants came, I was, I would have been a junior in high school. I remember the parade. and then I became, of course, a Giants fan, followed them for years.
I asked that question because I came to San Francisco in 1977. And the one thing I knew about the city is it had a very rich tradition when it came to baseball, not Major League Baseball, because as you pointed out, they moved out from the East Coast. But can you talk a little bit about what baseball was like in San Francisco as you were growing up?
Well, we were, when you look back at the old PCL, which was the game we knew as kids, and also my parents knew, my grandparents, my first professional baseball game, my grandfather took me to see the Seals play. And they were legendary players. Of course, the DiMaggio's all played for the Seals, but they had Gene Woodling and Ferris Fain and a number of great players that ended up in Major League Baseball. But oftentimes, the quality of the game was so good in the PCL that they would come back. Often, players would be shuttled back and forth, but many of them preferred the West Coast. And the rivalries were wonderful. We had the Oakland Oaks. There was the Hollywood Stars, the LA Angels, the San Diego Padres, Seattle Rainiers, the Beavers of Portland, the Sacramento Solons, and of course the Seals. And of all those that I've named, all but two are in the major leagues right now, all those cities. So it was a great West Coast kind of rivalry and some quality games. So it was wonderful.
You mentioned that in 1957, Horace Stoneham brought the Giants out of New York and to San Francisco. Tell me a little bit about him and how that transaction took place.
Well, you know, he was a guy who was quite shy and reticent. Many, many people who talk about Horace Stoneham immediately talk about his drinking, but he was, of course, a man of his time. If you wanted to look at owners who drank, you'd have the lineup pretty much of all of Major League Baseball. But he was an incredible person with his teams, and the loyalty he had to his players was something of legend. I had the privilege and opportunity to interview both Willie McCovey and Willie Mays, and that's one of the first things they brought up about Stoneham was his loyalty to his players. He was also a pioneer, Ron, in ways that baseball, I believe, has not given him credit. He really broke baseball's second color barrier when he brought in all the Latinos. It was really the Giants who brought in the great Latinos of the late 50s and early 60s. And he did another thing. He made the game global by bringing the first Japanese player ever to play in the major leagues, Masanori Murakami. So in addition to signing many African-American players in the late 40s, he was you know, the second player, the second team besides Brooklyn in the National League to bring in African-American players. He was a visionary and opened the game in many, many ways. And, of course, his great contribution is to bring West Coast, to get the major leagues to West Coast baseball. So that's another thing he should be given credit for.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you, is he a contemporary to the pioneer Branch Rickey with what he did with Jackie Robinson? Is he considered in that same light?
Well, no, he's not. That's kind of the problem. Stoneham's sort of in the shadows. And although he doesn't get credit for the first players, of course, Branch Rickey, you know, we know about Branch Rickey and Jackie Robinson, but it didn't take Stoneham much time to sign Monty Irvin and Hank Thompson. And then, of course, with the Latin players, he was truly one of the pioneers. So that's a great moment. So I think that that this is another thing that he should be sort of given credit for.
You know what surprises me about that? Here is a guy that was steeped, I guess you might say, in the East Coast, and yet he comes out to the West Coast and he does something like this. What was the influence? What made him so comfortable with doing that? Most people, certainly when they own something, like to stay with what is being done, the norm at that particular time.
Are you talking now about location? Or are you talking about his visionary ideas about players?
His visionary idea. I'm talking about Stoneham himself.
I think he was a guy who wanted to win, and he was truly colorblind. He didn't particularly care about the many owners, as you know, if you study the history of baseball in the late 40s and early 50s, were quite reluctant to sign black players, and never mind Latinos. And Stoneham just never felt that way. He felt that he wanted the best players he could get, and he was loyal to them, some say to a fault. And there are wonderful stories about Stoneham tearing up contracts that are extended for a couple of years and rewarding people with better contracts because of the year they had. In this sense, he wasn't a great businessman, but he certainly was a player-first owner.
How was he received, and how was the team received in San Francisco? Because I understand in talking to a lot of people in those early days, because of, I guess, as you mentioned, the PCL League and all the great teams there, they weren't really embraced, were they?
Well, they were. I mean, everybody kind of knew the wave was here. There was a sense, of course, of great history with the Seals. But the inevitability of Major League Baseball was something that was on people's minds. And there was a famous writer, the editor of the sports department at the San Francisco Examiner. His name was Curly Greve. In fact, they named the press room after him in Candlestick. He started pioneering this effort in 1952 and 53. And the writers were behind this. And when the Giants came, there was quite a bit of public excitement about the team arriving. And it didn't take too long in terms of fans for the turnstiles to be, you know, whirring, if you will. But there was a little reluctance to take on a New York team. They wanted the team to be their own team. And Willie Mays was in some ways the only superstar they had. And he received a kind of mild, one writer called it reticent reception. I would say that the team as a whole was enthusiastically welcome, but I think Mays, because he represents so much of New York, they didn't. The feeling in San Francisco was, we don't need New York to tell us we're a big league city. We feel we're all right ourselves. So, but nonetheless, they took to the younger players very well. And by the time Mays had put in a few years with the Giants, he was a native son. And there was no restraint anymore. They admired him as the great player he was.
Yeah, that's what I was talking about and talking to Willie a number of times. He told me the same thing about those early days. Rob Garrett is with us. I want you to check out this book. We're going to make it a selection of the month on the Sports Byline Book Corner. It's called Home Team, The Turbulent History of the San Francisco Giants. And I guess when we talk about turbulence, where does that come into the history of the Giants?
Well, Ron, one of the problems, I think, with the great success of the last, you know, recent 7 or 8 years where the Giants have been on top so often, and the fan base is so secure, and you have 3 million people coming through the ballpark almost every year since it opened in 2000, we forget that this was a very, very rough period for the Giants in many years. And they almost left town not once, but twice. and it was very precarious. And the city, the relationship between the team and the city was fragile. 1976, when Stoneham went broke, he needed to sell the team. The only offer he could get, no local stepped up. Toronto came in, and there was a big dramatic moment when finally Bob Lurie stepped forward and kept the team. And again in 92, when the team was sold to the St. Petersburg Group, again, no local owners at first, and 11th hour movement. The Giants were out of town, on their way, and the city was going to lose its baseball team. When the McGowan Group took over in 92, they're one of their, you might say, first charges was to get the new ballpark, and they worked hard at it, and once they established that, of course, things changed dramatically.
Yeah, of course, part of that is the fact that Bob Lurie tried to get funding for a baseball park in San Francisco a couple of times. It was rejected by the voters in San Francisco. It was rejected down in San Jose as well, and it finally got built, a new stadium, because they built it with the money, the McGowan Group. And everything. Yeah. And I think that's when things probably turned for the San Francisco Giants.
You know, everything, Ron, everything about the movement west in the early years had to do with where the team played. There was a lot of discontent with Polo Grounds for Stoneham, and for O'Malley, there was a lot of discontent with Ebbets Field. So the promise of new ballparks was foremost in the minds of these owners. And the Giants took a quick fix. They went for Candlestick in a location that was very, very poor. The ballpark was a terrible place to play baseball, and they endured for 40 years, and their troubles really had a lot to do with where they played. Once they got established at AT&T, things just dramatically turned around in every respect. Success on the field, success at the turnstiles, the bottom line, the stability of the franchise, the connection with the city, the fan base, it's just remarkable. In early years with 76, the Stoneham had trouble connecting with. 1 year, they drew less than 500,000 people came through in 75, the lowest in the National League. So it was pretty tough.
Yeah, it really was tough, and it was a terrible stadium. There's no doubt about it. I mean, for those people around the country and around the world listening, there is the infamous story about Stu Miller. It was windy.
Oh, yeah.
Stu Miller getting blown off the mound.
Yeah, exactly. And I put it in the book this way. And of course, I talk a lot about these sort of baseball lore, I say, having to do with the elements at the park. And the most famous or infamous, depending on your point of view, is Stu Miller's balk.
Yeah.
And I say, you know, he might still be up there in the jet stream blowing around in Candlestick fashion, you know. But yeah, it was all kinds of things. Casey Stengel once said he saw something in his 50-plus years of baseball that he'd never seen before during batting practice. A rogue gust picked up the batting cage, spun it around, and put it on the pitcher's mound. So these are moments that are pretty strange indeed.
We only have a minute left, Rob, and I'm just wondering, is there a way you can capsulize this book? What do you think, you know, the readers will take away from it, or you want them to?
Well, I hope they take away a couple of things. One is that Walter O'Malley did not lead Horace Stoneham by the nose out to California. Stoneham, in fact, had decided much earlier than O'Malley to move, and I think that's one myth I hope the book puts to rest. The other is the importance, as I said before, about why ballparks were so crucial for both the Dodgers and the Giants, and how the Dodgers took their time, didn't rush, and how the city of San Francisco was so concerned about getting the location, getting started, that they really put the team more or less in jeopardy for a good long time. And I think that's an important point. And the final point, I guess, is that given the success and the way that the team has connected with the city recently, how fragile turbulent is the word I use in the title, but how fragile all of that was for so many years, and what a great franchise the Giants are today.
Well, I want to thank you for writing the book, since I sit here in San Francisco and have been around for a good part of their history down here, and also for coming on and talking about it. Congratulations, Rob. You're welcome here anytime on Sports Byline.
Hey, Ron, thanks a lot. It's a pleasure talking with you.
Rob Garrett with us, Emeritus Professor of English and Humanities, but he has written a very insightful book called Home Team, The Turbulent History of the San Francisco Giants. We've got you on Sports Byline.